This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to the For Your Benefit radio show. We're here, May 11th, 2020, with Mark Levine. Mark is an attorney and partner in the firm Handler and Levine LLC. And the tagline for the show, if you've not seen it, is history making. Here we go. Help. There is a pandemic and I have not done my estate planning. Wow. So let's get caught up, Mark. So welcome to the show. Good to be talking with you. And how's life treating you before we talk about legal stuff?
It's good to be here, Bob. Life's been hectic. Luckily, it's been safe. My family is all safe and well. My three girls are home with us, and that is absolutely a blessing. So that part's good.
All righty. Well, and I have met all of them, so it's only going to be good with that group. So here we go. I bet your volume of calls has gone up substantially, unfortunately, since the pandemic started. But what's fair to say there? It's exploded?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say we get a lot of phone calls now. There are a lot of people who have that feeling. I mean, when you ask, when we talked about what would we be talking about today, that's what came to mind, because that is the essence of a lot of the phone calls I'm getting. Help, we haven't done our estate planning yet, and suddenly it all seems very real. It all seems like something, I heard you at a seminar, or a friend talked to me about what you did, and at the time, that's something that we worried about for the future. It was unlikely, it was something that was unnecessary, or even if I know it's necessary, it's something I can do tomorrow. And I think that a lot of people suddenly and all at once felt like tomorrow was today, that this pandemic has really brought into focus a lot of issues, not just, I don't have a will, but, I don't have a plan. And I don't have the things I need if I get sick, if my family gets sick, or God forbid something happens.
So I would assume that when you're talking to these folks, there's some commonality of the calls and the like. So is it understanding the basics of estate planning? Is it, I've never updated my will since whatever date? What's the common thread initially, and then we'll get into the detail in a second.
Yeah, I mean, I think the common thread is either having never done it. I think the common thread probably is procrastination. In other words, it is people who, either never did it or did it so long ago that it's not relevant, or have been meaning for various reasons, family reasons, things like that, to change it, and suddenly it's become urgent. I've had a couple of situations where families have that were estranged are now closer, and the parents realize that the estate planning they did for the estranged child is no longer what they want, but it's still in place, because although the estrangement took place, a long time ago, their planning's never been updated. So whereas they may have cut out a child, or a situation where there were different distributions or different things they were doing for different children, the fact that it's so permanent right now, that they really feel like something could happen and leave that estate plan that it doesn't reflect what they want. So I think that, the people who have never done it, the people who did it a long time ago but need to update it, is the bulk of the people reaching out right now.
Okay, so for those that call, let me pretend I'm one for a second, and I'm reading. What else am I going to do? I can't go out. I do this. Then I go, I'm going to call Mark. And this is just a shotgun approach and say, Mark, what should I change in my will, if any? Do you get those kind of calls?
Not that so much. In other words, it's not so much people saying, what should I change? It's really, like I said, the vast majority is people calling and saying, I haven't done it at all. And that's I think the biggest thing is people calling and saying, I don't have what I need in place. What do I do? How do I do the things I need to do to protect my family, the things I know I should do and haven't done? How do I get started? I guess that's the biggest single question is, how do I get started?
Okay. How do I get started?
I was teeing that up for you, Bob.
Okay.
I mean, I think, you know, I'll take you a little bit into what the process is and a little bit into then sort of what the results are. So, right, the process at getting started, I think this is one of the most intimidating things for people, is they don't know what it's going to look like. They don't know what it is to do an estate plan, to meet with an attorney, to find an estate planning attorney. And so, you know, these days, all the conferences are Zoom. So I, you know, hadn't heard of Zoom in January, and now, you know, I'm an expert user on a lot of levels of Zoom meetings, because I've had, you know, the number of Zoom meetings I've had over the last month and a half is more than the number of days, I think, in the last month and a half.
Mm.
And so, you know, it's setting that up. There's usually a questionnaire. Most attorneys are going to have a questionnaire for you to fill out. I think that's even more important these days with the telephone or Zoom meetings. I think in person, it's much easier to sort of bring documents to the attorney or to sort of have that back and forth. But I think it's really important with the Zoom or teleconference to sort of get some information to the attorney ahead of time. So most attorneys are going to have a questionnaire that not only is going to sort of gather information for the attorney, but it gathers information for you. A lot of clients are surprised by what they didn't know or didn't remember about their financial situation or about what it is that they had done previously. It also asks a lot of questions. And, you know, overwhelmingly, I have a client say to me, I don't know the answers to these questions, but I'm really glad to be thinking about them. And, you know, they're coming to the estate planning attorney to help them figure out the answers to some of these questions. And some of them are obvious. You know, you want your spouse to be your primary everything. You want your spouse and your kids to benefit. But there are a lot of other variables. There are a lot of different scenarios where not so much whether your spouse would be the primary person doing things, but who the backup would be. You know, who is it that's going to take care of you financially, administratively, health-wise? Those are all things that clients are hopefully starting to think about before they ever have that meeting with the attorney. And then the meeting itself, I know my goal, and I'm sure a lot of attorneys' goal, my goal is to have clients say at the end, that's so much easier than I thought it was going to be, or that's so much, this is so much less stressful than I thought. And the idea is to sort of have that meeting and try and figure out goals. A lot of clients come in with sort of an agenda, and I mean that in a good way. They've thought about what they want to talk about. But a lot of times, because they don't know the questions to ask or the issues, they're going to have answers and not realize that the questions are more nuanced than they thought. And so a lot of it's sort of having a conversation about goals. What are you trying to accomplish? Who do you want in charge? How do you want to take care of each other? How do you want to take care of your family? Because the how in that is the goal. We know you want to take care of each other. We know you want to take care of your family. The question is, what does that look like? And so a lot of the meeting is trying to figure out those goals. And the questionnaire is a huge help at the beginning of that to sort of understand who the players are and what the issues are. Is there a tax issue? Is there not? Is there a qualified plan with a lot of income taxes that are going to have to be dealt with? How are assets set up between, you know, if the person's single, obviously just within themselves, but with a couple, how are they set up with each other? Are the kids adults? And if so, do they need powers of attorney and health care directives? Are there parents involved that you need to support or that need their own documents that don't have them? So there's a lot of information that's going to end up in that questionnaire that's going to help the attorney help you frame questions and goals. And so that's the start. The start is just, you know, write the email, pick up the phone, because the attorney has done this before. We know how we're going to sit down with you and talk to you. We don't know what you want. We don't know what you need. We don't know what your goals are, but we know how to have the conversation.
I've seen your questionnaire. And some people listening might say, gee, an attorney is going to give me a questionnaire. This might be very difficult for me to understand some of the questions. But I find yours is not like that. It's all-encompassing, but you get to the point and you get off the point, and it doesn't leave the reader going, I don't know how to answer that. Or there might be a couple of things like that, but what I'm saying to whoever is listening, the questionnaire is more for your benefit than anybody else's to get the message across, to have it put in its proper perspective and put on the paper.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's important to understand about this is we don't care about exact numbers for sure. You know, what the attorney is looking for, what I'm looking for, are orders of magnitude. You know, I don't care if your TSP is, you know, 406,000 or 395,000 or 120,000 or 132,000. I care about orders of magnitude. So I care if it's 400 or 100. I don't care if it's 422 or 196. What's important are the general parameters, the outlines of what it is. And then in terms of what you want to happen, I have lots of clients who write, that's why we're calling you. They don't know. They don't know what the options are, and that's okay. You're not expected to have the answers in that questionnaire or in that phone call. That phone call, that initial meeting, whether it's in person or Zoom, is about, you know, sort of getting to those answers, or at least figuring out more sharply what the questions are.
Do you find that people don't mind meeting via Zoom?
I think that I know I always resisted it previously. I always wanted to do in person. I much preferred in person. I still think I do. I think everyone understands the reality of the situation we're in right now. And so I've had clients who say, I really don't like this, but I understand it. And I've had, I think, more clients sort of feel like, again, not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be weirder. I thought it was going to be stranger. And it's not any of those things. So I would say, yes, generally they don't mind, although I don't know that this is the new norm, for example. I think that people are ultimately anxious to be sitting across a table with their attorney or their financial advisor having those conversations. But I think everyone understands this is how it is right now.
All righty. One of our speakers, Karen Schaefer, uses the term nitnoid. She calls me a nitnoid. And a nitnoid, well, she does. She says, you know, you've got your nitnoid thinking on. So I would imagine let's now have the nitnoid facing Mark. And they might want to be very detailed right at the beginning, which is good because they've done some homework. But how do you start off with somebody? I mean, you've known them. Maybe you've met them at a seminar. Maybe they came in for an introductory meeting. But, you know, all people are different. Some are not necessarily going to show you all the cards that they're holding, even though it's important for you to see the cards, not because you're going to bet or win. It's without knowing all the things possible with that individual. Is it hard sometimes to get out what they want out of the meeting?
Yeah, I think that, again, sometimes when people come in with a really rigid agenda, it is a process to sort of move them off the agenda to open them up to other possibilities. Very often, you know, we'll end up back at the agenda or back at what their goal was. But I think that there are people who just didn't understand there were other options. So they have sort of focused on one way of thinking about it. And it's not that that way wouldn't necessarily work. It's just not necessarily the best option. Not the most efficient option. You know, we're always looking for the best mix of efficiency and whatever control the client wants. And so I think that there are people who, again, they very much feel like they know exactly what they want, but a lot of that's just because they didn't know what the other options were. And my job, any estate attorney's job, is to make sure they understand the options. And then if they come back and say, yeah, I understand that I could do this instead of that, but I want to do that. And so that's what we're going to do. And so you definitely get people who get into the nitty gritty, and you get people who don't want to get into the nitty gritty. You know, I have people who say, you know, I hire you and I've decided I trust you and I don't need to get into the nitty gritty. And other clients who just need to understand it, and they need to understand what they're doing. And you know, there's no right or wrong there. There's just different people with different needs. And as, you know, attorneys, you know, my job is to, you know, meet them where they are, not try and force them to be something they're not.
Okay, I think it's time for a break, and we'll listen to what WAPA, the sponsor of the show, can do for the listeners, and then we'll come back, and I'll initially maybe ask you some more pointed questions, and I'll pretend I'm your client. Talk to you in about a minute.
You have life insurance to protect the people you love. As a civilian federal employee, you have two choices designed specifically for you: WAPA and Fegley. The big difference? Price. Chances are WAPA premiums will cost you less. In fact, the average WAPA member saves $375 per year on premiums. Prioritize your peace of mind with a life insurance policy designed for feds by feds. If you're a civilian federal employee interested in comparing WAPA to Fegley, visit waepa.org today. WAPA is a proud sponsor of 4-Year Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Network, 1500 a.m. WAPA has been insuring the future of federal workers for more than 75 years. See why over 46,000 feds have already switched to WAPA at waepa.org.
All righty, welcome back to 4-Year Benefit. We're here today with attorney Mark Levine. Mark is a partner in the firm Handler and Levine. Mark and I do a lot of seminars. We're never on the same day, though. But anyway, we do a lot of seminars together. And so as an expert with regards to federal employees as well as non-feds, we're talking about estate planning. So we've got your package. And what do you find that people do? They probably come in two categories. One that has done some real homework and answered all the questions, put the detail in, and the other one that tried. So once you're then looking at that, do you get that in advance of them coming in so that you start with a leg up, or this is the first time you've seen it, the questionnaire and the list of assets?
Yeah, almost always we're going to have it ahead of time. I mean, we really want it ahead of time. It really makes the meeting, you know, no one really wants a meeting where you're just telling me facts that I'm writing down and looking at for the first time. So getting it ahead of time, it helps immensely to shape the meeting. In other words, very often I'm going to spot issues that you didn't know existed. And so it's really super helpful to do that. And what I normally do in the meeting is we're going to start with, you know, talking about what do you think your goals are? What are your issues? Because if a client has those on their mind, very often they're not going to hear what you're saying. They're just going to be thinking about why hasn't he answered my question yet? And so I usually like to have clients tell me what their thoughts are, their agenda for the meeting. And then we start talking about, you know, the issues, the reasons they probably came in, right? So they probably came in because they're worried about what happens if something happens to them, who takes care of their spouse, who takes care of their children. And that's usually the first thing on their mind. So it's the first thing we deal with. But as you know, as we've talked about in the past, an estate plan is not a will. When we talk about estate planning, so a lot of people think of that as, you have to be rich in order to do that. When we talk about estate plan, we're really talking about, you know, sort of dealing with your will, certainly, or revocable trust, but also talking about your power of attorney, your healthcare directive, your beneficiary designations, to make sure that everything is on the same path. Everything follows the same through line, so that not only is it people that you want doing things you expect, but it's as efficient for them as it can be, because that's often, you know, going to be important. And so we'll have conversations about, you know, what's ideal and what actually works in the real world. It'd be nice if all five of my kids could always agree on everything and I could name them jointly. But in the real world, that's not going to work. It's not going to be something that gets you from point A to point B. So, you know, a lot of times we're sort of setting those expectations at the beginning so that clients, you know, have their questions answered, but then sort of can listen to what are the other options or what are the other thoughts or what is it that I've seen in your questionnaire or in your questions that you haven't thought about?
So you mentioned two, if you will, titles. a REV trust, I think that means revocable trust, and a will. And sometimes when I hear that, are they the same with a different twist? What's more important than the other? Probably the answer is they're both equally important. But what is the difference between the two?
Well, the difference is in a last will and testament, essentially a last will and testament is a set of instructions for what happens inside the probate process. It's a set of instructions for who starts the probate process, for who's entitled to what over the course of it, who ends up with what at the end of it. And it, by necessity, deals with probate assets. Those are assets titled in your name, no joint owner, no beneficiary designation. But they always go through the probate process. So depending on what the probate process is like in the state where you live, a lot of people may look at other options. They may want to avoid probate. And by the way, I think the sort of probate avoidance industry oversells the avoidance of probate. I think it's oftentimes, very often, the appropriate course of action, but it's not always the appropriate course of action. It doesn't always make sense. But a revocable trust takes all of those probate assets and puts them title-wise, it retitles them into the trust itself, so that when you die, you don't have any probate assets, and if you don't have any probate assets, then there's no probate. And so that's really the difference. It's a delivery system. A will delivers your wishes through the probate process to the people you want to get things. A trust delivers your wishes outside of the probate process to the same people doing the same things, you know, with the same people in charge. So it's really a delivery system. Sometimes people call a revocable trust a will substitute. I really view it more as a probate substitute. It really is just delivers the assets to the people in a different way.
Is there a cost savings, if you will, from taxes to do it that way versus the other way?
So I would say for the most part, for taxes, the answer is no. Most of the things that you can do, although not all of them, but most of the things that you can do to save estate and inheritance taxes in a revocable trust, you can also do if your estate plan is based on a will. It does avoid the costs of probate. So in some states, that's very, very considerable. That's a lot of money. That in and of itself is a reason enough to do a revocable trust. But in a lot of other states, it's just not that meaningful, the cost. And so if I had a client who was terminal, I would almost always suggest doing a revocable trust if they had probate assets, because, you know, the costs of probate are probably going to be more than the cost of doing the revocable trust. But if a client is likely to live as not for the next 20 years, those cost savings aren't real, because the client's probably going to come in and change their planning again. They're going to do other things. They're going to move. There's going to be lots of things that may require new planning, and so those savings become sort of illusory. So it depends on where you live. I mean, that's why it's really important to talk to an attorney that practices regularly in the jurisdiction that you're in. I have clients who call me from Texas and want me to do their estate planning, and I'm not going to, because I really just don't know the rules there well enough to be effective.
That's a good point, because where you do your seminars, I do my seminars, sometimes it's, you know, it's local, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, maybe a little north, maybe a little south, maybe a little west. But it's concentrated in there, but now we do seminars virtually. So we might be talking to somebody wherever they might be, but one thing they're not is local. And I would imagine, like you just said, the individual that called you up from, I think you said Texas, and you were frank, and you'd say, I know these. Texas is not one of them.
Yeah, occasionally I have clients who say, I don't care. I want you. And we will work with an attorney in Texas. So a number of times I've done estate planning or an estate plan, and then we find an attorney in the jurisdiction and say, okay, make this work in Texas. What do we have to change? What do we have to do? But for whatever reason, the client wanted me to be the person working through what the plan would be, even if another attorney effectuated the document or made the document be, you know, appropriate for that state. And that's okay. It's just more expensive. And so there's so many good estate planning attorneys everywhere that most of the time, you know, it's better for the client if we help them find an appropriate person in that jurisdiction to do the work.
It's a good point. We share some similarities there. And Metro DC, which we both are, it's a mecca for people to move in and move out. And when I'm doing a tax return, they may have come from some other state or a spouse is in another state. And like you say, I have a feel for what's in that state, but I don't want to do something because I have a feel on it. I want to know that that what I'm doing is accurate for them, or did I not ask the right question? So I do my homework, or I'll call, you know, if you will, some of the network of fellow accountants and say, you know, what's different about your state other than the obvious? And I'd imagine you do the same thing. So
that's exactly right.
So at the end of the day, we're there to, you know, to service and to, you know, and to bank whatever we're doing as bulletproof as we can. So we have to rely on that. And even sometimes locally, there'll be some quirk about an asset somebody has with regards to income tax. And I'm sure with regards to the state, and all counties aren't created equal, even within the same state. But, you know, you have to know that, and you have to know that if you're not sure, then you'd say, this is my feeling, but I want to have conference with a fellow professional.
Sure. You want to do what you do. You don't want to try and do what you don't always do. You know, and so, you know, when we're meeting with clients, we're looking for those issues too. But most of them, and I will say especially most of them, you know, in the last couple of months have really been about, I need the basic stuff. I need to have, you know, a will, a power of attorney, a healthcare directive. I need to make sure my beneficiary designations are set up. And so, you know, there's a lot of people who just have never done the basics. And so, you know, what we want to make sure is that they understand what they need to do, that the basics that everybody needs, you know, one of the lines that I probably use too often is, you know, as adult humans with children, I know you need the following. I know you need powers of attorney and healthcare directives. And you need to think about not only what happens, you know, who is the person making the decisions primarily, so that's usually going to be one spouse for the other, but also, you know, what if you're not available? Who's the person that's going to do that? And if you think, well, my parents, that's fine, but then we've got to look at what if they can't. So we want to always make sure that if we're going up a generation, we're going down a generation. If you think about people who you know, you want to be in charge of your kids. And a lot of people, that's one of the hardest decisions. One of the reasons people don't come in is they can't figure out who they want to be in charge of the kids. And I think one of the things that a good estate planning attorney does is really help you crystallize what you need from that person. What is it that you're doing? How is it that what is it they need to be able to do? You know, there are two real parts to taking care of your kids. There's taking care of them physically. Who are they going to live with? Who's going to decide where they're going to school? Who's going to decide, you know, if it's safe for them to go to summer camp in a particular year? Who's going to make all those decisions? And then also, who's going to be in charge of their money? And the money question is one that lasts a lot longer. You know, my kids are, you know, 20, 17, and 14. I have an adult, I have an almost adult, and I have a middle schooler. But the need for someone to be there for them if something happened to my wife and I doesn't end when they turn 18. We need to make sure that there is an adult, preferably a family member you trust with common sense, who is going to help sort of guide them, provide scaffolding, provide guidance in what happens if the worst thing in the world happens, they lose their parents at a young age, and suddenly there's all this money. And so I do have a lot of clients who will say to me, well, you know, this is who's in charge, and then at 18, my kids just get everything. And we sort of walk through what does that look like. You know, their frontal lobes are not attached at 18. They're often not attached at 25. And so the need for that other person to continue to provide guidance continues. And I think that's one of the biggest things I would say. If you're somebody who hasn't done your estate planning because you can't figure out who's in charge of your kids, a good estate planning attorney is going to be able to help you. Obviously, we don't know your family. We can't help you choose between your brother and your sister-in-law and who's going to be in charge, but we can give you some of the things they have to do and some of the issues that come up, and that might help you figure out who's the better person for doing that.
When you talk, let's say, with a couple, or let's say an individual, and maybe the individual, there are no children, maybe there's a brother or sister, maybe there's a charity. But things change from your first meeting, and you craft this bulletproof will, trust, and things change. The less than attentive child becomes very attentive, and maybe the other one becomes less attentive. So are there adjustment periods, or would it be dictated by the severity of the change? So if somebody was very trustworthy and competent but became less so after a while, then you got to change the will, I guess, to protect them against themselves. How do you do that?
Well, I look at there being sort of three big phases, right? So there's zero to let's say 21 or 22 on the other side of college. And your plan is not likely to change dramatically in that time unless there's a real issue with your child, a drug problem, some sort of other physical issue. It's likely to be the same. And most of that's because we don't have a ton of data about who they're actually going to be. So the choices I make for my 20-year-old, 17-year-old, 14-year-old, they're similar, quite frankly. Even though my 20-year-old obviously is an adult, I still would like to see her on the other side of college. I'd like to have more data. And that's the key, right? So when they're 30 and 27 and 24, I have a lot more data about them. I know choices that they've made in the real world. I know choices of partners that they made. I have a lot more information. And in those 20s, I may be changing it from what I had when they were 14 because I know them a lot better. I still probably want some scaffolding. I probably still want somebody who, when this terrible thing happens, is there with them. But it may not need to be as long-lasting. It may not need to be sort of as autocratic. So I may move from my sister being the sole trustee to my sister being a co-trustee with my child. And then the hope is, as your kids enter their 30s, they're going to move into those roles. They're going to move into being the people who are your powers of attorney and are your healthcare agent and are your executors, that you're not going to need trust for them, and that, you know, they're going to be stepping into taking care of you. So I think the 20s are the hardest decade to deal with, because your kids may change and you may want to change your planning, you know, two or three times over that period of time. And it's also where it diverges, you know, where you stop treating kids exactly the same and start treating them based on the data you have. And sometimes that means two kids are going to get things outright at your death, and one kid there's still going to be a trust for because they need the trust. And you've got the data and the information to show you that. So I think that's the evolution often in these documents.
Okay, I think it's time for a break, and we'll let folks listen to what NITP, the seminar firm, can do for them. And then when you come back, I think I'm going to ask you a question. What if there are changes with regards to the parents later on? They might want to spend some of that money that they had accumulated, and how do they square that up in the wills and the trust with regards to the kids and or their friends? Anyway, we'll be back in a minute.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're in the last quarter of the show with Mark Levine. Excuse me. Mark is an attorney at law, fellow seminar presenter, partner in the firm Handler and Levine. And if you're just tuning in, do yourself a favor and start at the beginning. Anyway, Mark, things change. Let's say the people or the person that set up the will, maybe they weren't married, maybe they are married, maybe they set money aside and now they're in whatever age they are, but they're looking at retirement and they like to spend some of the money, but they're they have a quandary. So how do you work around that, or have you ever experienced that?
Sure. I mean, that's a conversation, and to me it's a pretty easy thing. Spend your money. You're assuming your kids are adults, assuming that they don't actually rely on you to support them. Spend your money. Obviously spend it carefully and spend it after consultation with financial advisors and CPAs and making sure that you're going to have enough for you. But there's nothing I wouldn't say nothing that bothers me more, but it always bothers me when clients don't want to spend the money on themselves because somehow they feel an obligation to leave it for their kids. So they shouldn't. They should spend it. They should be comfortable. That's why they made the money to begin with, which isn't the same thing as being foolish, and doing things with it so that you don't have the money to support yourself. But I absolutely am in favor of my clients, buying the car that they want or going on the trip that they want and not depriving themselves because of what their kids may expect. That's pretty straightforward. I think the changes to the documents as time goes on, I don't really think it affects it that much. We generally leave things to kids in percentages. There's three kids, they each get a third. And that's a third of what's left, not a third of what mom and dad had when they did the plan to begin with. So spending the money in and of itself is not really a thing that's going to change the plans. Sometimes it will change it if there were a lot of specific requests. So I wanted this person to get 10,000 and that person to get 10,000, and maybe there's not enough money anymore for those specific requests. But honestly, that doesn't happen that often. And so whether the people are single or married, have kids or don't, once you're past the point where you're responsible for making sure there's food, clothing, and medical care, spend your money. You earned it, and you shouldn't deprive yourself because you think you need to leave it to somebody.
That's a great point. I'm thinking about my experiences, maybe even my own. I'm a child of Depression-era parents. I remember saving aluminum foil. I'm not making this up. And washing out the paper towels and the like. And so I saw that. And initially, I was in that camp, save every cent. And then as time went on, my father once said to me, he said, why don't you let some of the moths fly out of your pocket? And so I thought to myself, he's the one that taught me all that. Now he's saying spend it. So getting back to your comment, people's minds change with regards to maybe the things that they've accumulated. So I'm looking at more, not the gazillionaire, but somebody that have more money put aside because they saved it. And the kids know that there's approximately X dollars, and then they see the parents going prior to today on a European vacation, or they're buying a nicer car, et cetera, and they're going, they're using my money to do that. But do you ever have parents then come in and say, I need to change this a little bit because I don't think there's going to be as much left?
I don't think, usually if the parents have left things equally, three kids, a third each, that's usually not going to be the case or an issue. I occasionally have clients who come in who are bitter about their children's complaints about what they may spend or do with it. There are some children who absolutely have planned to inherit a certain amount of money and have lived a lifestyle that they can't really afford, assuming that they'll make it up when the parents pass away. And so I've occasionally had clients go the other way with that and say, we're not going to leave them this or that. Or really how it ends up is those kids are begging or trying to get them to give them money now So that they'll get it ahead of time. But those aren't really the issues. Those aren't prevalent, I'll say. I mean, I'm happy about that. That's not a thing I deal with a lot. It's a clear and small minority of clients who have those sorts of issues with their kids. And again, as long as you're leaving it to your kids in a percentage, if you had $1 million and now you have $500,000, they're still getting the same percentage of what's left. And that's all they're really entitled to is what's left. That's not the bigger thing. The bigger thing is really the people who haven't done planning, who don't have a power of attorney in place. You know, one of the things people have asked me about, you know, the sort of the pandemic issues or things that people are concerned about. They're concerned about dying, but I'm concerned about what happens if they're in the hospital. I'm concerned about what happens if they can't do things for themselves and there's no power of attorney or there's no healthcare directive. There's nothing about being married that gives your spouse the right to sign your tax return. There's nothing about being married that gives your spouse the right to, you know, deal with your IRA. So if you're in the hospital and someone has to make decisions about buying or selling or reallocating your IRA, if that isn't set up ahead of time, just being the spouse doesn't give someone the right to make or authorize those changes. So having a power of attorney becomes vitally important. And I think the same is true with the healthcare directive. You know, you're not going to be in the hospital right now with your loved one if they're there. And so having a document that says you're the person who gets to make those decisions, a document that you can email or send with your loved one to the hospital, becomes more important. I often call the healthcare agent the healthcare advocate because they're the person arguing with the healthcare providers or advocating for you. That is harder now than it's ever been. There are more issues to deal with. There are less easy ways to deal with them. And it becomes more and more important that there be a clear path for who's in charge. And so, you know, much more people are concerned about those sorts of basic issues of I'm not covered, or that they don't even realize they're not covered, that they need to have these plans in place.
Okay, the power of attorneys, they are powerful. So somebody might say, okay, yeah, I'll be a power of attorney, and they sign the document, and they maybe didn't read it. Because that document is probably not easy to read because it has to encompass so many things. Or maybe it's children and one of the children of two is left out, or one of the three from having a power of attorney or even be a successor. How do they handle that? Because you want to teach.
Yeah, so that.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, let me say that's really important. I think one of the big things that we talk to clients about is how will your kids get along after you're not here to moderate or mediate. And so I think transparency can be really, really important and building transparency into the document. I have lots of clients who say to me, oh, well, my kids will be fine. They'll deal with it. They get along. And the truth is either they don't actually get along or they just don't know each other that well sometimes, or, you know, the stress of a situation may lead to misunderstandings. So we try and build transparency into these documents. So if, you know, Jane appoints her son Matthew as the power of attorney, we'll say, that's fine, Matthew's making the decisions, but the other two siblings have transparency. They can get all the bank statements. They can get all the brokerage statements. They can get information, and we try and make that as passive as possible so that they're not constantly asking Matthew for information. They're simply getting information. We also may have some things that require everyone to agree and some things that don't. We don't want Matthew to have to call and get agreement on paying the mortgage every month, but we may want him to have to get agreement on selling the house or changing the beneficiary or making gifts, even if mom used to make them all the time. Those are things that we may want agreement. So we look at what's the balance of transparency and checks and balances that's going to work best to keep this family and these relationships intact. Sometimes clients say to me, look, giving my one son information is a terrible idea. He will twist that information and create problems, and it just can't work that way. Okay, well, that's why one size doesn't fit all. That's why a computer program isn't going to be able to work you through the particulars of your family, because in your family, what I just outlined might be a disaster. And the only way to know that is to sort of walk through the scenarios. So I think that building into these documents transparency and sort of keeping it all with an eye towards protecting the relationship of the family when you're incapacitated or when you're gone, I think is really important.
So you're building a road to happiness with serious guardrails.
Trying to, yeah, trying to think through the you know, the pluses and the minuses and everything that may work or not work.
Certainly that helps because you've had years with boots on the ground, so to speak. But, you know, sometimes earlier on in your client's life, early 20s, marriage, maybe there's a child, maybe there's no child, maybe there's a divorce. That's got to be tough to handle because it wasn't necessarily envisioned, maybe mentioned mentally, but it wasn't envisioned. What's some of the worst you've seen and some of the best you've seen? That's a whole show, I mean, probably.
That probably is a whole show. We can do that as a whole show. I mean, not doing things and assuming it'll all work out is almost always a mistake. You know, yes, there are situations where someone's an only child and everything is going one way, and neglect might work at the end of the day. But certainly anytime you have a second child and anytime you've got complications, simply assuming it'll work out is usually not going to work out. We all at some point or another suffer from magical thinking, from thinking that somehow, some way, despite our not dealing with something straight on, it's going to work itself out. And, you know, the worst thing that can happen to you sometimes is for that to be true, because then you think that's going to happen all the time. And so I'd say consistently the worst thing I see is clients engaging in magical thinking, that, you know, thinking if they don't plan for it or if they don't address the issue. One of the reasons why I really prefer in-person to phone calls, and certainly Zoom is better than phone calls, is that I can see people's reactions. I can see one spouse say, well, it'll be fine if our daughter's in charge, and the other spouse wince when they say that. And I can look at the other spouse and say, you don't agree, how come? And they'll tell me why. And maybe it's something that the other spouse will say, well, I just assume that'll work out. You know, they'll grow up and it'll be fine. And, you know, that's a form of magical thinking, I think. So I'd say that's always the worst. The best is always planning. It's always picking up the phone and having the conversation, you know, being as transparent as makes sense to your family and your family situation. And those situations are always better, even when they're uncomfortable. I've had clients who have loaned money to one kid and not the other, and it's a secret. The rest of the family doesn't know. And, you know, depending on the situation, we'll say to them, look, everyone's going to find out. It's all going to fall on the child, not on you, because you'll be gone. You really want to think about dealing with this now rather than dealing with it later, or not dealing with it at all. And so I think that being proactive always ends up better than, you know, being neglectful, being, you know, just assuming it'll all work out, even if you don't deal with it head on.
How does one get in contact with you?
Sure. So by email, Mark, M-A-R-C, at handlerlevine.com, handlerlevine.com. Phone number, 301-961-6464, extension 3313. So it's Mark, M-A-R-C, at handlerlevine.com. And obviously our website too, www.handlerlevine.com, handlerlevine.com.
Okay, that's very good. Thanks. Sorry. I get wrapped around the axle, so to speak, talking and thinking of questions that I forget about, probably one of the better questions. Anywho, what do we have? 2 minutes left, Andrew? Andrew says 2 minutes. So final thoughts, comments?
Yeah, I think that, look, this has created a level of stress in people and clients that is unusual and sort of not seen before. I'd say consistently clients are worried about getting this done, about what happens if they don't get it done. And sometimes that freezes people. And I think if there's anything I've been consistent about this hour, it's take the first step. Reach out to an attorney that you know or have worked with. Reach out to a friend or a family member who you know has worked with someone they liked. And certainly if you're in the DC area, reach out to me and I'll be happy to help you. But at the end of the day, take the first step, reach out and start planning, because at the end of the day, you're going to be happy that you did.
And you'll be happy that you did. And while we're going through the different subject areas, there'll be maybe a change that needs to be made. And you did address that earlier. So you craft the best document known to the document world today, but 10 years later, something has happened that would require a change.
And yeah, absolutely. And some, I've had some clients who say, look, I just want to get the basics done right now. I know we've got more to deal with and I'll deal with it, but I have nothing and I want to get that dealt with first.
Okay. Andrew says we've got 1 minute. So it's just final thought and then not to put you on the spot.
No, not at all. I'd say, again, do something. Step up, do make a phone call, make, you know, send out an email, try and start the process. Listen to these podcasts because I have, and they've been great. A lot of information about, you know, benefits and issues and things that are coming up now that haven't come up before, because this is something we've never faced before, something we've never dealt with before. But action over inaction at the end of the day is going to be the best way to start.
All right. This is actually, I'm thinking here at the last 15 seconds, this is a great show for what we're all going through with regards to health issues and the like. Anyway, thanks for being on the show, Mark. Take good care, and I'm sure we'll talk before it gets too late. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WAPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.